No idea how embarrassing it is to show up here without it. I called my daughter and told her to bring my second one, but she can't get here until tomorrow. I'm going to have to tell them I forgot to bring it with me. People pay to see that ring.
He was whispering now and handed Garcia a business card.
Look, I'm not from around here, and I'm not afraid of these boys. Those guys, Keating and his buddy, especially that woman. They paid her to cheat me. They were all in on it.
He squeezed Garcia's shoulder like he was gripping a 20-yard pass. TJ's ruddy cheeks were blanching again, and Garcia remembered how his face had crashed in on itself last night at the sight of Keating's full house. He could understand the anger, but it was easy for an outsider and a man of TJ's wealth to make an accusation like that.
That's a hefty allegation, Garcia said.
The more he thought about it, the more he suspected it was true. But he couldn't act on just a hunch. He'd need more proof than that.
But you were there. What did you see?
We'd all had a lot to drink. I wasn't really sure what happened.
Assuming you weren't in on it, right?
TJ gripped Garcia's shoulder.
Right? Of course not. I'm just not sure what I can do. You're a cop, right? Throw your weight around a little. All I want is the ring, okay? If you can't get it for me, I'll get it myself. But no one wants this to get messy. Nobody needs to admit to anything or apologize. Nothing like that.
The minister announced that breakfast was being served in the fellowship hall, and TJ said,
I gotta go.
He gave Garcia a card.
That's my cell. Call me anytime.
He straightened and followed the crowd through the door. Garcia put the card in his jacket pocket. He'd paid to stay for the breakfast, but he'd had his moment with Bangor, and the man had asked him for help. He imagined Bangor on the other end of the phone, the surprised relief in his voice when he called, if he could manage to return the ring. Help out a hero. Be a hero's hero. Face down a judge and maybe earn some chops on the force. Blind River was such a closed-up system, especially downtown. That had worked in his favor when he'd first moved here. He'd needed the isolation. But the more he thought about it, the more he felt that Keating and Loyal had taken things too far. Everyone knew they ran something on the side. That bogus annual veterans fundraiser was coming up. And what had they ever done with the proceeds but repaint the meeting hall and plant a few crepe myrtles on Main? They should have at least planted oaks. Huh, he thought.
Follow the money. That might be my angle.
Loyal, the good old boy with the new Dodge Ram. Trucks like that ran what, 50,000? Where'd he gotten that kind of money? Unemployment in this county was at 9%, and wages were busted flat as 20 years ago. They were taking good money from hardworking people. And Keating, with that ivy-covered Tudor and creamy white Cadillac, Garcia would do some snooping around. Maybe get lucky fast. He walked to his 10-year-old Toyota, wondering how many Super Bowl rings there were in the world. He guessed a few thousand total, and was struck by the effort required to win one. He added TJ's cell number to his contact list, then he started the engine. He lit a cigarette, inhaling deep enough to get a hot sting in his lungs, and put the car in drive. Chapter 8. Monday afternoon, Jamie pulled her stocking cap over her ears and left Angel's house, where she had been holed up since Jack had dropped her off Saturday night. Overhead, the sky was fat and low with another front moving in from the west. She walked to the edge of the field next to the high school and stood at the chain-link fence with her backpack at her feet, her hands jammed in her pockets for warmth. The appointment with Jilkins and the principal had been set for 3:30, after the final bell. She hoped that Toby was still inside the school, hoped he hadn't bolted and left her to handle them alone. She'd helped him out plenty of times, and he owed her one. They had survived the last 8 years by being human shields for each other, and she would need him there later when she told Loyal about having lost the money. That's how she planned to put it, make it sound like it had been misplaced on accident. He might buy that. Probably not. But the Monday night group were a bunch of laid-back shop owners, and if she told him right before they showed up, things might go easy. He definitely wouldn't hit her in front of them, and they would be there for hours. Maybe by the time they left, he'd be passed out. At 3:15, the school bell rang, and kids poured through the doors into the parking lot like a flood of minnows rushing through the shallows, climbing over the fence, into cars and buses, walking alongside the ditch that led away from the football field. All of them wound up from too many hours spent in a compressed space, most of them in need of a smoke and a couple of unstructured hours. It had been less than a year since Jamie had been stuck inside those walls, waiting for life to begin. She remembered the impulse to flee at the end of the day. Now, a year later, she was nagged by the suspicion that those days might have been the best she'd ever know. Toby was the tallest kid in his class, and easy to spot in a crowd. She didn't see him leave the building. When the last school bus pulled away from the curb, Jamie went inside. She checked the detention hall behind the library, wondered if he was scamming the nurse again, and walked toward the main building to check the infirmary. She saw him through the tall glass windows, slumped on a bench outside the principal's office, pretending to catnap. He looked up when she opened the door.
"Chilkins is hell-bent on some stupid program."
He rolled his eyes and dropped his chin back to his chest. The school's guidance counselor spotted her through the glass walls. She picked up a file off her desk and came out the office door. Miss Chilkins followed her.
"We were expecting his uncle,"
Miss Holland said. Jamie took off her stocking cap and twisted it in her hands. "He's sick today and sent me instead. Said to say he's sorry." Miss Holland stretched her neck impatiently, as if she'd expected something like this, and said,
"I guess you'll do then."
Toby slumped forward, his elbows to his knees, hiding a smile. "What's going on? I'm sure Toby will apologize. Right, Toby?"
"Apologies won't do this time," Miss Holland said. "We're seeing a pattern of behavior that needs to be addressed. We think Toby is a good candidate for a new program."
Toby groaned. Chilkins took the file from Holland's, flipped through some pages, and found a form. She gave it to Jamie.
"This is a program aimed at helping young men who show signs of, well, who struggle with social skills. Toby is inclined to push smaller students around, tell them what to do. We'd like to change that."
"He's just bigger than most kids his age. He's not a bully," Jamie said, not believing her own words. She looked at the form. It was an evening program run out of the school. Toby would see it as nothing more than detention. But all she had to do was take this home, sign Loyal's name, and this would be over.
"And we'd like to keep it that way. This program will help him learn to manage his temper."
Toby started popping his knuckles, and Jamie cut him a look. Everything they were saying was true. He was used to getting his way, using those long arms and big fists. Most kids kept their distance. Hollins tilted her head and adjusted her glasses.
"With a little empathy training, though, Toby could work this out. He might even become a mentor, a student liaison for this program across the county."
Jamie asked.
"That sound good to you, Toby?"
"It sounds gay," he mumbled.
Jamie held his gaze. They wouldn't get out of this until he went along. Finally, he stood and said,
"Yeah, I'd love to improve my social skills."
"Good. Have your uncle look that form over and sign it. Toby, you should bring it to my office tomorrow,"
Holland said.
"Consider it done,"
Jamie said. But Holland's wasn't finished. She pulled out a copy of Toby's number sheet.
"And we found out about this today. Apparently, he's taking bets on the basketball team. This kind of gambling isn't legal, and it certainly isn't allowed on school property."
Toby scratched the back of his head and looked toward the front door.
"The thing is," he said, "I didn't know that."
Hollins cocked her head at Toby.
"Yes, I think you did. You are to return all the money to the students you took it from. And you will get that done by the end of the day tomorrow. Do you understand?"
Toby splayed his big palms face up like an innocent man and huffed.
"Ugh, okay."
Jamie wondered how much of it he'd already spent, how much more she'd have to come up with to cover it.
"I'll make sure that happens."
Toby walked past the woman and leaned on the glass door at the entrance.
"I have a lot of homework. Can we go now?"
Jamie followed him to the door, but Chilkins stopped her.
"By the way, Jamie, how's college?"
"Fine,"
Jamie said straight-faced.
"Good, fine, it's all good."
She turned to catch up with Toby, who was holding the door for her.
Oh, good. I always knew you were a bright kid,
Jilkins called. Right.
Me too,
Toby said when they were outside. He loved mocking Jilkins' high-pitched voice.
I've always known you were a bright kid.
Shut up. Loyal won't sign that form. He'll say it's for fags. I'll take care of it, Jamie said. They cut through the cemetery. Last week's storm had blown the plastic flowers everywhere. She hated plastic flowers and was glad to see the place torn up. She looked in the direction of their father's plot, somewhere near the back corner, and thought for the millionth time that she should take Toby there again, at least show him where to look for the headstone. They'd gone there once when Toby was 10. He'd covered the engraving on the headstone with his foot and rubbed his eyes till they turned red. He'd refused to speak to her for the rest of that day, and since then, they'd fallen into an unspoken ritual of silence when they walked by the cemetery on their way home. Each time a car came up the road, Toby ducked his head and stepped off the curb. What are you so twitchy about?
Billy Pivens. He says I owe him.
A snow tractor had shoveled Main Street, leaving clumps of mud and snow along the curb. Cold, flat air slapped the blacktop dry. She wondered again if she could leave this town if her brother never did. Do you?
I sold the same square twice by accident and it hit. I paid him half, but he wants it all.
She stopped mid-stride and swung around to face him.
Jeez, Toby, how did that happen? I said it was an accident. Christ. It didn't go like that, I thought.
You gotta be tight if you're going to run a sheet.
The fuck you gotta tell me that for? I think I know that now, don't I?
She rubbed the back of her neck, sensed a headache traveling up from beneath her left shoulder blade, and switched her backpack to the other side. Listen, you aren't the only one in trouble.
Yeah, Loyal was pissed when you didn't show up at Keating's or all day yesterday.
It isn't just that. She realized her eyes were dampening. She stopped, and after a couple of steps, so did Toby.
What?
I didn't get the deposit to Jack. Toby stepped closer and lowered his voice.
What the fuck did you do? Spend it?
I just needed a loan, for a day or two. Loyal wasn't supposed to find out. He squared up to face her.
How much was it? Can you get it back?
No. We went to Mimawa. Lost it all. Toby wrapped his arms around his chest and rocked forward.
Jesus, he'll kill us both.
He won't take it out on you, she said.
Right,
Toby said,
because we both know he never takes it out on me.
It was true. Toby was the boy, and he got smacked harder, longer, and more often. He's been good to us, Toby. I mean, overall.
Yeah,
he said, sort of.
He'll go crazy when he finds out about this. He called you all day yesterday.
I know. I turned my phone off and stayed at Angel's house, trying to come up with a plan.
Hiding out is more like it.
Jamie wondered if she should lay low for a few more days, or face her uncle now. Wondered which option would be less painful. She could show him the laptop, explain how she thought she had the money to cover it, how she had planned to pay him back. It wasn't her fault the government had shut down the sites. They turned at the corner of Main and First and slowed to look in the storefronts. The same set of golf clubs had been sitting in the front window of the pawn shop for over a decade. A new gun shop sat between Blind River Funeral Home and the men's shoe store. Farther down was a wholesale casket store that was perpetually empty. Mac Dyson, the pawn shop's owner, came out of the Main Street diner, cleaning his large teeth with a toothpick. He was a tidy man, with thick soled shoes and vacant eyes. Everything about him seemed bland until he smiled. And then he resembled the Doberman he kept chained at the back door of his store. The dog lived out there during the day and inside the store at night. They stopped at the diner and Toby shaded his eyes, looking through the plate glass window. Dyson walked the 20 feet from the diner to his store. As he went inside, he called back to them.
She's out sick today.
Jamie hated that everyone in town knew they were Phoebe's kids.
Damn, I wanted a burger.
We'll get something from the 7-Eleven. Meyer still has my last paycheck. He pulled a box out of his jacket pocket and opened it to show Jamie.
Her birthday's tomorrow.
It was a silver chain with a tiny cross on it. You bought her a necklace?
Well, I didn't steal it.
He snapped the box shut and stuck it back in his pocket.
It'll make her happy.
Try not getting your ass expelled from school before you graduate, she said and started walking. That might make her happier.
Like, you should talk. Try not getting your ass sent up for grand theft.
He turned up the street, taking long, angry strides. He'd grown a couple of inches this year, his cheeks losing some of their roundness. The peach fuzz was gone from his chin, and she figured he'd shaved that morning, maybe for the first time ever. She followed behind, letting him cool off. When they got to the 7-Eleven, Myers was behind the cash register.
I saw you out back the other day, you know. You got balls coming in here after that.
Wasn't me. I've been out of town, she said. Toby went straight to the back and grabbed two hot dogs off the grill.
Uh-huh,
Myers said. He reached, blank-faced, under the counter where she knew he kept a pistol. Jamie froze. For an instant, she thought he might pull the gun on them. He could say he thought they were robbing him and no one would be able to prove different. All the cops that came in here every morning to buy coffee and cigarettes, they were all his friends. So who would take their side if he shot either of them right now? He pulled his hand out from beneath the counter and held up an envelope.
Your last paycheck.
Jamie stared at the envelope, feeling ridiculous, letting the air re-enter her lungs. Toby filled a big gulp cup, drank half of it, and refilled.
Hey!
Myers snapped.
It's not a goddamn water fountain.
She looked at the amount of the check. He'd docked her for a uniform she'd spilled grease on, and twice because she forgot to mop the floor. She slid it back across the counter. Just cash it.
Take it to the bank.
He rang up their drinks. Come on. She pushed the check toward him on the counter. It's $52. Myers folded his arms over his chest.
No.
You want to get paid for this stuff? 'Cause we're broke. He shook his head hopelessly and searched his pocket for a pen.
Sign it then.
He took the cash, less the sodas and hot dogs, from the till and slapped them on the counter.
Got a new guy for the morning shift. A good worker. Does everything I ask.
That right, Jamie said, stuffing the money into her pocket. Toby walked to the door and pushed it open.
That's right,
Myers said.
Goes to show you really can still find decent help these days.
She smirked. She had definitely not been decent help. Her heart wasn't in it. Never had been. She didn't want to be good at a minimum wage job that would keep her stuck in this town. She wanted to be good at something that would get her the hell out of here. Toby held the door for her, and she briefly glimpsed the man he might become. He muttered.
I bet he bends over for him, too.
And she laughed. He spit on the sidewalk, stepped on the splat, and ground it with his boot.
Let's cut through the woods, as long as you don't fuck around on the tracks.
Sleet was beginning to fall. Jamie put her stocking cap on, and even though she hated walking beside the tracks when the afternoon train was due, she followed him. They took the south end of the trail through the woods, and in a few minutes were walking alongside the tracks.
Who'd you go to Mimmel with?
Jack.
What the fuck, Jamie? That's your way out, right there.
Blame Jack? No, it wouldn't be right.
Oh yeah? We're back to doing the right thing, are we? He was there, right? He would take the heat off you. You, meaning us.
Jamie sipped her soda, debating the idea quietly.
Mom went there once, Toby said.
Where? Mimowa?
Uh-uh.
That was Atlantic City. Remember, she brought you that t-shirt with the dice on it?
Yeah, he said. The dice. Why'd she go there anyway?
He asked. Mom?
Yeah. Why'd she go to Atlantic City?
I don't know. Probably met a guy, Jamie said, but she wasn't really sure.
Which one?
Elvin, you know. The one with the Camaro.
Oh, man. That was a nice car.
You remember that? You were so little then. His eyes darted back and forth as he searched his mind for the memory.
It was red with yellow flames on the side. Man, I loved that car.
Jamie nodded, though the car had been green. She remembered that guy, and all the others Phoebe had brought home. Toby had fallen for every one of them. But that was before Phoebe went to prison, and they ended up sharing that room in the back of Loyal's trailer. A mile out, the train sounded like distant thunder. In another minute, it would come barreling around the bend just 50 yards away. Jamie said, "Come on," and walked down into the gully. Toby stayed on the tracks, turned around and faced the direction of the train, spread his arms Christ-like and raised his face to the sky. She hated when he fucked around like this, hated him for needing such a rush. "Get off!" The train came into view, hurtling toward him. She screamed. He opened his eyes and smiled. The conductor leaned out the window and tugged on the horn. A screeching wind boomed down the gully as Toby jumped off the tracks. He hit the ground, rolled into her, and took her out at the knees. The train whipped past them, pinning their hair to their heads, while the conductor shook his fist at them, mouthing something like "fucking kids."
"You're a goddamn ass," she screamed,
but he was curled in a ball at the bottom of the gully, laughing too hard to breathe. Chapter 9. Jamie and Toby were drenched with melted sleet by the time they got home. The sun had set and it was freezing inside the trailer. Out of habit, she started cleaning, bagging garbage, emptying bottles and food wrappers that Toby could never seem to throw out on his own. He wrapped a blanket around his shoulders and parked in front of a space heater that glowed so red hot at its center they sometimes used it to toast marshmallows. Toby turned on the TV and flipped through the channels until he found bare-knuckle cage fighting, his favorite. She set the garbage outside the back door and rounded up his clothes and the other crap he'd left around the living room and hauled it to his cot in the back room. Loyal's room was shut. She twisted the doorknob, thinking that blackmail wasn't completely out of the question, or that maybe she'd come across some old family heirlooms she could hawk at the pawn shop. But she'd scoured his room 100 times, and it was the same pigsty as always. The place stank of unwashed bedclothes and moldy carpet. His shotgun leaned in one corner, several cartons of shells stacked beside it on the floor. She'd priced that shotgun on eBay before, and knew that even with the cartons of bullets, it wasn't worth enough to cover the cost of shipping. She checked the box he kept under his bed and found his collection of nudie postcards from his buddy, begging him to ditch Blind River and get on down to Key West. The small black lockbox she'd never been able to pick, a snapshot of him and her father when they were boys, one of the grandparents she'd never met, and a new bank statement she was tempted to open but didn't because the seal hadn't been broken yet. Sometimes there was cash, but not today. She heard the rumbling of engines outside and Toby yelled, "You better get out of there before he comes inside." By the time the engines cut off, she was in the kitchen wiping out dirty ashtrays. Toby, glued to a blood fight on TV, said, "I hope he's got pizza." Outside, Loyal yelled for him to open the door.
"I got it,"
Jamie said, and opened the door, stepping behind it to let him through. He had a case of beer under each arm. 2 more cars pulled in. The Monday night crowd was made up of Dan Remsen, who owned a gun shop on the north side of town, Charlie Creel from the liquor store, and 2 other men she'd seen but hardly ever spoken to. These were men Loyal had grown up with, and in whose stores he kept some of his gaming machines. And then there was creepy Mike Tuckahoe, who came in carrying 6 boxes of pizza. She hated the guy. They stomped their boots, grunted half-hearted threats at each other, and filled the trailer with the cold, musky smell of seldom-washed winter coats. Just as she'd hoped, they'd arrived at the same time as Loyal. When her uncle noticed her standing behind the door, he dropped the beer on the counter.
"Where you been?"
He made that scowl that used to scare her when she was little. She hated when he made faces, and opened the freezer pretending to look for ice. "Oh, sorry about the other night. I got hung up."
"Keating hired you for the night, and you're telling me you got hung up?"
"But Mom showed, so no problem, right?" He slammed the freezer door shut, barely missing her nose.
"Who are you with?"
"Jack." Shit. She'd meant to play this differently.
"What the fuck you doing with him?"
His eyes narrowed and she saw the possibilities snapping together in his brain. Across the room, Toby was shaking his head at her. "We went to Mimawa." Every time she opened her mouth, things got worse.
"You went to the casino instead of doing what I told you?"
He took a step toward her.
With my money? Goddamn.
He balled up his fist and pressed it against her jaw. Traffic was worse than I expected. I couldn't get back in time.
Now you're lying.
He'd never done more than slap her face before now, but she'd never lied right to his face. She backed against the freezer.
You blew it, didn't you?
I fucked up. I'm sorry I lost it. If she pushed his fist away, it would only make him angrier.
Lost it. That's what you call it?
His spittle splashed on her cheek. She could barely meet his eyes, but then she spotted Dan moving in slowly on her right.
Hey, now.
He stepped between them and put his hand on Loyal's chest.
Take it easy, man. She's just a girl.
Mike Tuckahoe opened a pizza box and stuffed half a slice in his mouth. He stared at Jamie's chest.
Yeah, she's just a girl.
Loyal dropped his hand.
We'll finish this later.
The worst was not over. But if he let her play, it might give her a chance to prove she could make back the money. Maybe I could sit in on the game, she said.
No room,
Loyal said.
Willie's not coming,
Dan said.
She can have his seat.
Loyal shot him a look but said nothing, so Jamie took a chair.
Me too?
Toby got off the couch.
Not happening. Count out the chips if you want to play, Jamie. It's another five if you want pizza.
Jamie got the last of her cash from her pocket. Loyal nabbed her money off the table.
The pot's 400, winner take all.
Toby went back to the couch with his pizza and surfed the channels.
Turn that down, Toby,
Loyal said. He pushed the cards to Jamie.
You deal.
The game moved slowly until the food was gone. She folded her hand for the first round so she could get the feel of the group. They played old style, like she expected, limping in for cheap, hoping to hit the flop, folding every time the pot got raised.
That VA tournament's coming up, isn't it?
Dan asked. He'd been a part of the group for 5 years, even though he'd never won, and Loyal often called him a donkey to his face. He was usually the first player to bounce out.
Saturday,
Loyal said.
What's the buy-in this year?
1,000.
She knew Dan would never play for that much money.
Goes up every year,
Dan said.
It's been 1,000 for 3 years,
Loyal said.
Takes a lot of work to put that thing on.
He crushed a beer can in his hand. Jamie knew better, though. He'd run the tournament so long it wasn't work anymore. Make a few phone calls, rent some tables, and hire a few dealers to come in from Mimawa. No advertising necessary, because the locals couldn't wait for this event. She'd been watching the show for years and knew he took a big rake. But nobody seemed to care. Not even the vets. Everyone got lunch, free beer, and a chance at one big prize. It generated goodwill among the local boys who had actually served their country.
Got a surprise this year.
Loyal twisted the top off a new bottle of Jack.
Got a big celebrity coming. Good player, too.
Charlie said.
I heard TJ Bangor speak at the Methodist Church. That the guy?
That's the guy,
Loyal said. He swigged the whiskey from the bottle and set it on the table.
Oh, man, he's huge. Big as a door and still in awesome shape. Everyone wanted to see his ring, though, and he didn't have it on. Said he left it home on accident. I might scrape up enough to try my hand against him. Rich guy like that, though, probably plays high stakes all the time.
Sleet turned to ice and struck the roof hypnotically.
Sounds bad out there,
Dan said. The chatter quieted while the men cocked their ears to the ceiling and murmured their agreements. An hour into the game. The beer was gone and Toby was snoring on the couch. Loyal hadn't said a word to her, but Jamie felt his eyes on her each time she shuffled. She made a point of keeping her hands on the table where everyone could see them. She kept an eye on him, too, hoping to see it when he marked an ace because she'd never known him not to find a way to cheat. A few good pots came her way, and she made enough bluffs to build a decent stack. By 9 o'clock, the ice had stopped falling and the room was warm. Jamie cracked a window to let in some fresh air. In another 10 minutes, three players had run out of luck and gone home. It was down to her, Loyal, and Dan. She had the lead, but she knew better than to bully Loyal in front of Dan. She folded three hands in a row, trying to pit them against each other. The next hand, Dan busted Loyal's trips by hitting a straight on the river. Loyal glared at the cards, pushed his chair back, and joined Toby on the couch to catch the local news.
Go easy on me,
Dan said, and gathered up the cards to shuffle. She needed this win, and shuffled the deck until she felt the corner of one of the aces that Loyal had bent and dealt it to Dan. Any ace, and she knew he'd go all in. It was 50-50 luck, the kind of luck she knew to bet on, and she paired a 10 on the river. Sorry, man. Dan shook his head. He pushed away from the table and grabbed his jacket.
It's okay. The wife won't like me out on this weather anyway.
At the door, he covered his head with his jacket and ran to his truck. She went to the porch, watched the mud fly at his feet, braced when she heard Loyal's footsteps come up behind her. He stepped outside and lit a cigarette. There was nowhere to go. The halogen lights of Dan's truck backing out of the driveway hit Loyal's face, lighting the gray scruff on his cheek, the jowls that sagged beneath his jaw. Dan's lights turned up the road. She knew the worst was coming. Hoped it would pass quick. When the truck was out of sight, Loyal grabbed her wrist and held it at an angle. Pain shot up her arm. One time he'd twisted Toby's arm hard enough to crack it in half. She waited for the snap.
You know I'm going to have to cover this, don't you? If Keating realizes you ever thought about stealing from him, you'll be in his crosshairs for the rest of your life.
Jamie winced and grabbed his fingers, but he was too strong. I thought I could cover it.
It didn't belong to you.
I'd won some online. I needed a new computer. The money never came because the feds shut down the site. She tried to keep the pleading tone out of her voice. Pleading never set well with Loyal.
You played poker online and were fool enough to think you wouldn't get cheated.
I won 400 here tonight, she said, keeping her eyes level with his. It's a start. I'll pay it back, every dime of it I will. He squeezed her fingers into a fist and white pain filled her brain so fast she couldn't breathe.
What does Jack have to do with this?
You're going to break my fingers. She tried to twist her hand free, but he gripped her fist tighter. She couldn't look him in the eye. We tried to win it back. Pain crept up her arm, beyond her shoulder, into her throat. He landed an open hand on the side of her face and shoved her into the doorframe. The back of her head smacked the wall. Pain, like lightning, seized her arm. She thought of Toby, because if he saw this now, he'd jump in between them. She slumped to the porch floor and pulled her hand to her chest, trying to unfold her fingers and listening to see if the noise had woken him up. Loyal had never been this rough with her, but it was all her fault.
Then you both owe me. Was Phoebe in on it too?
No, Jamie said, drawing the word out and holding her wrist. She couldn't straighten her fingers.
So you clowns run off to Memoir, and I'm into Keating for $6,000.
I can get it back in a few months. She'd done the math and knew it would take closer to a year. He stood over her, his big knuckles in her face.
It'll take a year, maybe two, for you to win that much. And that's if it goes your way every time, which it won't.
She knew that.
I'll tell you what you're going to do. You, Jack, Phoebe. The three of you are going to work that tournament exactly the way I tell you to, and you're going to make that money back.
Okay. She tested her fingers again, flexed them until it seemed nothing was broken.
I didn't ask you, I told you. And from now on, you do exactly what I say.
He stepped back inside the trailer.
Born a thief.
It was an ancient accusation, but she hated when he threw it in her face. He had no idea what her choices were, what it was like being an elder's girl. I'm not like her.
The hell you aren't,
he said and slammed the door. An engine started beneath the streetlight across the street. She sat in the corner beside the door and peered through the dark. Her first thought was of Jilkins, but it wasn't her style to sit outside their home. And besides, no one from family services would be out in this weather. All Jamie could make out was the shape of a man's shoulders and a dingy brown sedan. Inside the trailer, Loyal banged around the kitchen. In another minute, the door to his room slammed shut, and she knew he'd gone to bed. But it was safer out here, so she waited a little longer before slipping inside to her cot. Chapter 10. Early Monday morning, Garcia had gone to the Dodge dealership in Braxville, just south of Blind River, and shown his badge to the owner. It took some convincing, but 30 minutes later, he was looking at a $52,000 cash sales receipt for Loyal Elders' brand new Dodge, the upgraded edition. Who had that kind of cash? Garcia had never seen that much money in one place outside of a stint on the Narcs unit 10 years ago. He got the address from the DMV and was a little surprised when he ended up in the trailer park on the south side of Blind River. Abandoned cars were everywhere. In the street, in the side yards, up on blocks. There was no way to know which one went with which trailer. The sun had already set by the time he parked his Civic beneath a broken streetlight. He got lucky quick when a half dozen cars and trucks converged on the address. He ran the plates on each car, but nothing hit. Still, he touched his revolver in its holster, an old habit, locked the car doors and pulled his lapels up around his ears. The temperature had dropped 15 degrees since sunset, and now it was sleeting. An hour later, a 30-something white male came out of the trailer and stumbled to a banged-up Eldorado that Garcia had ignored because it was parked three houses down. He got the license number as the truck drove by and ran the plate. Mike Tuckahoe, registered sex offender. Fuck, this was not the direction he'd expected. By 9, the cars were clearing out. He could have arrested 3 of these guys for DUIs, but that wasn't what he was there for. He wiped the fog off the windshield. It was coming down hard again, and his feet had turned to ice, but he didn't want to announce his presence by idling his engine and running exhaust out the tailpipe. He sank lower in the front seat. Another man came outside, followed by a young woman who stayed on the porch while the man got in a truck parked in the driveway. Loyal Elders came outside, the bulk of his frame filling the doorway. The truck backed out, briefly lighting the 2 people on the front porch before it turned up the road. The woman was slight, more like a girl. Garcia looked back at the porch and saw Loyal grab and twist the girl's arm, smack her once in the face. Garcia reached for the door handle. But then the girl got away from Loyal and crawled into the corner. Loyal went back inside and the porch light went out. She seemed okay. A girl, though. It didn't sit right. Garcia pulled up the address for Tuckahoe and started the engine. In a few minutes, he was halfway across town and the warm air from the car's heater was thawing his toes. From the street, it could have been a crack house. The boxwood hedge looked like it had been trimmed with a hatchet, what with the mess of limbs jutting out beneath scant greenery. The glass on the front door was cracked and repaired with glue and tape. The front porch listed toward the street, its floorboards gaping and warped. He parked, got out, and banged on the door, hoping the glass window wouldn't fall out on his shoes. On the other side of the door, he heard bare feet approaching, slapping like wet mops. The porch light came on, and Mike Tuckahoe, pulling a t-shirt over his head, peered out through the fringe of curtains.
"What do you want?"
Garcia held his badge up.
"You hanging out with kids again, Mikey? Huh? No? I was just playing poker with a couple of guys. They can vouch for me."
Garcia motioned at the door.
"Open up."
Tuckahoe arranged the t-shirt over his belly and opened the door. The smell of whiskey and backed up sewage hit Garcia in the face. He put his hand over his nose and stepped to the edge of the porch. From the back of the house, a woman's voice called out.
"Who's there?"
"Go back to bed, Ma."
Tuckahoe stood flat-footed in a pair of dingy boxers, scratching his crotch.
"Who's the girl?"
Garcia asked.
"What girl?" "The girl at the Elder's place tonight. You've got one chance to give me a straight answer." "Hold on there."
Tuckahoe rubbed a thumb over his left eye.
"That girl lives there, or used to. No, wait, she stays somewhere else now. The court told you to stay away from kids. All kids by 100 yards.
Those are my buddies. Besides, she's just some scrawny girl. I can't help it she lives there.
Yeah, and I can't help that I saw you breaking the conditions of your parole. You could get sent back for that.
Man, don't do that. I'll be out by lunchtime tomorrow, and for what? I didn't touch that girl.
But you looked, didn't you?
Nobody told me I couldn't do that.
He scratched his crotch again and looked over his shoulder.
What the fuck, dude? Why do you keep touching yourself in front of me? Punk, sitting on your butt in a warm house while my balls freeze in this crappy weather. Take it easy, I got bed bugs is all.
Tuckahoe put his hands up.
It won't happen again. Who else was there? Same guys every week, just local boys. Dude, it's just poker.
What are the stakes?
$100, winner takes all. Nothing illegal about that.
You ever been to Judge Keating's game?
Fuck no. He's the one sent me off.
Garcia tapped a cigarette from his pack.
What's Loyal Elders doing at the judge's house, then?
How would I know?
He blew smoke in Tuckahoe's face.
You gonna stand on my porch smoking? Least you could do is offer me one.
A pain started in Garcia's shoulder, a sharp pinch beneath his clavicle. He'd met too many guys like this. They knew no limits and were easy to buy. He shook another cigarette out.
How's a guy like that come up with the money to buy a brand new truck?
Tuckahoe took the lighter, lit his cigarette, and leaned against the doorframe.
He works at the fertilizer plant, don't he? That's a good job.
He hasn't worked there in years, not since the explosion.
What's that been?
3 years?
I don't know, his businessman.
Garcia flicked the cigarette into the damp yard.
Maybe we should go downtown, get a cup of coffee, and continue this conversation someplace warm.
A light came on in the back of the house and the woman hollered.
What kind of trouble is it at this hour?
Leave it, Ma.
Tuckahoe closed the door behind him and blew smoke out the side of his mouth.
I'm just trying to live my life. What do you want?
We were talking about your buddy, Loyal.
Okay. He knows lots of folks, enough to run some numbers now and then. That girl? Maybe she helps him.
Is that right?
Might be, but you didn't hear it from me.
That girl, she's a sweet one, eh?
Heh.
Tuckahoe reached for his crotch, but instead hooked his thumb in the waistband of his underpants.
I don't know. Girl like that, though. Tight little ass. Sweet. Don't even touch it.
Garcia fought the urge to hit this perp.
There you go again, you stupid shit. You don't know how to act.
He slammed his hand against the door jamb and Tuckahoe jumped. The lights in the house came on. A dog started barking across the street. Mrs. Tuckahoe, wrapped in a pink housecoat, came to the front door. Her mouth opened, then snapped shut, and she pulled the housecoat tight to her neck. Garcia rubbed the back of his neck. This wasn't what he was after. He stepped off the porch.
Don't let me see you near a kid again.
Chapter 11. Phoebe watched Keating put on the robe and tie it at his waist before getting out of bed. They were older now, but he showed less wear. Living on the outside did that for a body. Doctors, dentists, supplements. He was pudgier than he'd been in high school, but he wore his hair in the same style as he had back then. Longer, though, than suited her taste in a man, and gray at the temples, but still as wavy as in their youth. High school. The prom. Going with Keating had been an inside joke among her friends. It still made her smile. How she'd agreed to go with him, and then left him holding her shoes and standing beneath the basketball net on the opposite side of the gymnasium, while she danced with every other boy there. Oh, how she had loved torturing him. 1 week later, she'd gone and eloped with Jim Elders. Eventually, Keating had left for college anyway. She knew his type. Screw a local, marry a highbrow. But he had never married. He returned from the bathroom and crawled under the covers, still wearing his robe. The modesty surprised her. He touched her lips and cupped her chin a little rougher than she liked.
I always liked your smile. Sly and cocky. The crooked little mouth of a liar.
She didn't know how to take that. He hadn't been gentle with her when she arrived, hadn't even offered dinner. Earlier at the diner, he'd slipped her a note that read, 8 o'clock tonight, my place. She'd been adequately late, but he'd seen through her fake ambivalence and taken her straight upstairs to the master bedroom. The room was dowdy, though she could get used to it. She'd never felt sheets so soft, carpet as thick as pudding.
A sly smile hints at a quick mind, he continued. I always thought you were smart. Maybe too smart for your own good.
She wondered if he meant then or now, and just how much resentment he still held against her. Well, two could play that game. Is that what you thought when I eloped? His face turned hard.
I thought you got what you deserved.
She sat up. And now? Do you think I got what I deserved? He was quiet for a moment.
No. I didn't mean it that way.
Whiskey and sex had made her drowsy, and she wanted to lie back down and close her eyes. But she wasn't comfortable here anymore. She'd finally given him what he'd wanted all those years ago, and now she felt foolish. Now he'd turned mean.
I only meant you deserved, Jim. I mean, that's not what I mean.
Well, what do you mean? Just say it for Christ's sake.
Look, that jail sentence wasn't my fault. I don't know why you agreed to it. That was all the prosecutor presented me with. All I did was sign off on it.
Her only weapon was silence, and she decided to let him stew in it. She lay down, closed her eyes, hoping for a few hours of sleep and to leave before he woke. It was dicey, being here in his house, much less in his bed. But it was riskier for him. A judge with an ex-con. He had more on the line than she did, and she wondered if she'd stumbled across a secret weapon. If anything, he could improve her image around town, at least get her a better job. As she contemplated the possibilities, her mind began to drift to white. Then a dull thump from downstairs startled her. What was that? He dismissed it as noise from the foundation settling, but sat up at the sound of a small crash. She sat up too, suddenly alert, and moved quickly to pull on her blouse. He found his slippers. Don't you have a security system?
I left it off in case you left in the middle of the night, he whispered.
He opened a drawer, got a handgun from the nightstand, and walked across the carpet to the door.
There's another pistol in the drawer if you need it, but you stay put.
You're not leaving me here, she said, and found the second pistol. Briefly, she thought to hide, but there was no way out of the house from the second floor. They went down the carpeted stairs, and when he stepped into the kitchen, she was right behind him. The deadbolt on the back door had been jimmied loose, and the door was ajar. She thought about running out the door, but it occurred to her that a second person might be outside. There was safety to numbers, so she stayed behind Keating. The door to the basement and game room was half open, and inside it a flashlight flickered across the walls. Keating released the safety on his handgun and went down the stairwell first. He pushed the door open. A man was stooped low over the bottom drawer of the bar. When Keating flipped on the light, TJ Bangor stood to his full height and smiled slowly. The crystal decanter in his hand was half empty. He took another swig. Recognizing his face made her feel better, until she remembered what they'd taken from him. Keating lowered the barrel of the gun to the floor.
What are you doing in my house? I came for what's mine. You're not welcome here. Get out.
TJ pulled out the drawer he'd been looking through and carelessly dumped its contents on the floor. He threw the drawer down and it broke in half.
I'm not leaving here without my ring. You set the alarm off, and the police are on their way. You leave now, and I'll tell them it was a misunderstanding.
TJ laughed at the lie. He was so big, he made Keating's gun seem like a toy, like he could just walk over and take it if he wanted. Keating had taken this too far, and she wished he would give the man his ring and end this now.
Good. Maybe they can help me find my damn ring.
TJ waved the decanter at Keating and took another drink.
Nice stuff you got here. A lot better than the swill you served the other night.
He threw the decanter against a bookcase and it shattered, leaving amber splotches on the wall and carpet.
What the fuck? That belonged to my mother.
TJ wasn't threatened by the gun or Keating's advantage, which, if he ever had one at all, was fading every second they stood there talking. Phoebe thought about running for the back door, but a man that big could overtake her in 2 seconds.
Give me my ring,
TJ said.
We both have a lot at stake here, son,
TJ slurred.
Don't call me son.
He swayed like a pine in a windstorm.
I'm not leaving here without it. Okay, calm down. It's right there on the bar in the humidor.
TJ lifted the lid. The Super Bowl ring was on the center cigar. It seemed like it was settled. He could take the ring and leave. Phoebe started to back away from the door, but TJ caught the motion and wheeled toward her. His face shifted to comprehension.
You're that bitch.
Her heart pumped in her ears.
Take it easy, it's not what you think,
Keating said. But TJ lunged, or maybe he tripped. It would never be clear in Phoebe's memory. Shots blasted the air and bullets lodged in the man's midsection. He looked surprised as his legs gave way and he hit the floor. TJ let out a gasp of air as blood bubbled in his mouth, oozed down his cheek. He convulsed once, then again, and finally stopped moving altogether. Chapter 12. Jamie woke to the sound of Loyal's cell phone ringing in the kitchen, and his footsteps thudding down the hallway to answer it. She refused to open her eyes, flopped onto her back and pulled the blanket over her head. But she heard Loyal say,
God damn it, I'll be right there.
In another moment, he came back up the hallway, opened the door and pointed a flashlight at her. The light hit her eyes through the threadbare blanket.
I'm sleeping, can't it wait till morning?
Get up.
It's still dark.
Get up.
He yanked the blanket off her. Across the room, Toby sat up.
What's going on?
Go back to sleep,
Loyal said.
You two going somewhere? I'm coming too.
Toby threw his blanket off and groped to find his sweatshirt.
Stay put,
Loyal said. He pointed at Jamie.
You, grab some jeans and come out here.
She recognized the tone in his voice and knew from the frown on Toby's face that he did too. It's probably nothing, she said, hoping to appease him. Go back to sleep. In the kitchen, Loyal poured a cup of day-old cold coffee into a glass and guzzled it.
God damn, it's early.
The oven clock read 3 a.m.
Can't Toby do whatever this is? I mean, it's rare when he actually wants to help.
Loyal sloshed some water on his face and spit in the sink. He rubbed his head hard, the gray hair standing up on end.
Toby's strong, but he's got no guts,
he said in a low voice, then pointed at her.
And you? Goddamn owe me.
She couldn't argue with that. I'll put some coffee on.
No time for that. Keating needs help. Needs it right now.
Loyal started pulling on his boots.
If you want a chance to get out from under your debt, you got it tonight.
Doing what?
Everything I tell you till sunup. But you play by my rules.
Right there, she knew that whatever he needed help with couldn't be good. He stepped closer and towered over her. Her jaw clenched, knowing she had no choice, but it was a chance to get back on her plan to leave this fucked up town.
And you don't ask questions. You keep your mouth shut and don't speak unless you're spoken to, understand?
She glanced down the hallway. He lowered his voice.
And Toby can't know.
He grabbed his keys.
Get your jacket and come on.
Okay, she said and pulled her boots on. Where are we going?
Keating's place, and that's the last question you ask,
he said.
You see any cars come up on us, you get down on that floorboard, you hear? The fewer people knowing our business, the better.
They looped north on the county road to avoid Main Street. It was after hours, but there were a few cars at Crowley's Pub, like Eddie and some of the servers kicking back with a nightcap or two. On the other side of town, the houses on Keating Street were dark and silent. Loyal turned into the driveway beneath a row of sagging elms and pulled around to the back of the house. A porch light spread yellow over the backyard. The door to the freestanding garage was propped open with a metal bucket, a thin light on inside. Keating came out from the garage carrying a folded blue tarp, the yellow porch light like a stain across his hands. He dropped it in front of the truck when Loyal cut the engine.
The hell you bring her for? What? You going to help me, you skinny bag of bones? It's a one-man job. The hell it is. That man's huge.
Keating climbed the few steps to the back door.
It's not her damn business.
Jamie got out of the truck. A light in the upstairs window backlit a familiar silhouette. Loyal picked up the tarp and carried it inside. He pushed Jamie's shoulder as if to wake her from a dream.
Stop staring. Back the truck up to the porch and drop the tailgate.
He followed Keating inside. She looked back up at the window. The curtains shifted slightly and the light went out. 15 minutes later, the men reappeared at the back door dragging the tarp, bundled and wrapped with twine, their breathing labored and fogging the cold night air. The tailgate of the truck sat a good 6 inches above the level of the porch, and transferring it into the truck bed took everything they had. Loyal climbed out of the flatbed and straightened his back stiffly. He rubbed his left shoulder and slammed the tailgate shut. Keating waved toward Jamie.
What about her? You got big enough problems. Leave the girl to me.
Keating grumbled something and spit on the ground, but he went inside and closed the door behind him.
Get in,
Loyal said, but Jamie just stood next to the truck staring at the tarp. I'm not getting in there. She turned for the woods. She'd rather hike alone at night than help dig a grave. Loyal caught her near the garage and grabbed the wrist he'd twisted the night before. White light shot behind her eyes and her knees nearly buckled.
You are getting in this truck.
That's a dead man and this is a felony.
Just being here puts you in over your head. You best come along.
Seeing is not the same as participating.
Damn it, girl. I had a choice and I chose you. I could have had Toby help me with this, but I gave you a chance to get square. Besides, you think he'll get into the army if this thing comes to light and he helped? You really want to drag your little brother into this? You made your bed when you took what didn't belong to you.
He took her by the back of her neck and steered her to the passenger door.
That man is dead, and there's nothing going to fix that. But if you play this thing smart, you might improve your situation.
The way he put it, she had no choice. It was horrible and gross, but she'd never dump this on Toby. And if Loyal was willing to cut her a deal, she might be able to pay him back in one night. She opened the door and got inside. He climbed in behind the wheel and handed her the flask.
Take some whiskey if it helps, but get down on that floor.
Chapter 13. Jamie sat on the passenger side floorboard, staring up at her uncle and the truck's dashboard lights reflected in the window beside his head. It was stupid, having to hide like this. She could jump up, yank the door handle down, and roll out backward. But she kept quiet and thought about her brother. Everyone thought he was such a bully, but she knew better. That first year after Phoebe left, he'd barely slept through the night without waking up crying. Something like this would scar him forever, and he'd already been scarred too much. If she bailed now, Loyal would drag him out of bed and into this nightmare. She pushed her back against the door and bent her knees to her chin. Loyal cracked his window and lit a cigarette, driving slowly and making so many turns that she lost her sense of direction. Each time he opened his flask, the smell of whiskey cut the night air.